Hard Place, a novel by R.A. Jacobson. Listener discretion is advised. Contains strong language, violence, and some adult situations.
Chapter 6. In Truth. In truth, John Whitey Burnett, the legend, didn't exist, never had. He was the invention of Dwayne Marsh, his alter ego, the music man he wished he was. Dwayne was a quiet man, not interesting nor special, the type of person no one ever noticed, or if noticed, not remembered. He worked in the local supermarket's produce department, stacking lemons and refreshing broccoli while listening to Willie Brown and Robert Belfour on his headphones, lost in his own world, certain his time would come. Certain it was merely a matter of time, and not much at that, the devil would notice him, and marveling by his playing would grant him all he desired.
Chapter 7, M.L. Acheron. 3 days later, Matt still had not heard from Alan. He had cleared his desk of all the jobs Alan had handed to him. None had been too challenging. He had spent most of his time watching a small round store owner. The store owner's wife had hired Alan to find out if he was cheating. She was sure he was, and it turned out she was right, although not in the way she thought. He did not have a love on the side. He had an entire family on the side. She had been a bit surprised when he told her. He closed the case file and sent the invoice and sat looking across the waiting room at Alan's office door. He had looked through the papers at Alan's desk several times. There must be something, some clue that would point to where he was. Over the last few days, Matt had received several weird messages from Alan. They were truly bizarre. The few words Alan had spoken were disjointed and unconnected. They sounded like he had forgotten how to use his phone or was having some sort of an episode. It was like two people were trying to talk at once. Matt replayed the messages multiple times, trying to make sense of them. He had called and texted but got no reply. He stood and walked to Alan's office and looked at the empty chair. "Where are you, Alan?" he said to the room. He walked around the desk and sat in the chair. Once again, he scoured the papers, hoping he had missed something. He hadn't. There was nothing to suggest where Alan was. He pushed the chair back, leaned forward, his head in his hands. This was getting serious. It had been a full week. There were cases only Alan could deal with, and they were time-sensitive. "Where the fuck are you?" He glanced down and saw a small notepad lying on the carpet under the desk. He bent forward and picked it up. On it, in childlike scrawl, was the name M.L. Acheron. The pen had pressed so hard it had torn the paper. Matt opened Alan's laptop and did an initial search, but there was no individual named M.L. Acheron. He got other hits that felt implausible. A classical music group, a boat in Florida with a dive service, and of course websites about Greek mythology. Further down the search window was the Acheron Lounge here in the city. He clicked on the link, and it took him to the homepage. After a bit of digging, he found that they had a singer named Mary Lou. Was this the M.L. from the note? It wasn't much to go on, but it was a start. He scribbled the address down and left the office.
Chapter 8, Every Wednesday. Every Wednesday, Whitey would gather up his guitar, shades, low-slung hat, and head down to Old Tom's back room, a dark bar on a street that had seen a better day, that filled its midweek lull with an open mic. The gloomy interior concealed the mismatched chairs and peeling paint. Its suspect food and dubious reputation made its popularity perplexing. Many stories were told of the goings-on behind its doors. The best was the fable that Bob Dylan, calling himself Blind Boy Grunt, had once walked in, played a few tunes, and walked out. The longtime bartender kept a shot glass on which Grunt had laid his lips. John made his way to the bar and walked in, expecting to be recognized, acknowledged, and treated with hushed awe. He walked past the legion of earnest singer-songwriters sitting on the edge of their seats, waiting to be discovered. He didn't notice the silent groan from the host as he signed up. He was known here.
Chapter 9. Jacob visits Brian and gets some exercise. Jacob was freezing as he rolled his bike into the garage beside Clyde. He wasn't ready for bed. What he needed was to mull over the cryptic words Red had spouted. He lit a fire, and after a few minutes, the stove was kicking out warmth. He sat on an old car seat close to the heater with his feet up and sipped on shine he had warmed on the stove. The burn slid down his throat, swirling in his belly. He nearly finished the jar when, frustrated with unanswered questions, he decided he had had enough and headed inside to bed. The next morning, Jacob woke with a jerk. His joints ached. He hadn't slept well. The same weird repeating dream woke him several times. He was standing with a massive crowd of people staring at him. Wordlessly, they seemed to be trying to tell him something important. But he didn't know what it was. He would wake confused, roll over, and fall right back into the dream. The sun was cresting when he gave up on sleep. He didn't want to stand there any more with all those people looking at him. He pushed out of bed, cursing the icy floor. "When the fuck is it going to warm up?" he said to the chilly room. He pulled his clothes on, stumbled past Brandy's closed door, down the stairs and out the back door, catching it before it banged shut. Coughing, wishing he had a coffee, he walked to the garage, squinting in the early insipid morning sun. Jacob was grateful Clyde wasn't in a talkative mood. He was probably still pissed about yesterday. Well, fuck him. He's not going to worry about it. He walked past Clyde, pushed the knucklehead out of the garage, and rolled down the lane to avoid waking Brandy. When he felt he was far enough away from the house, he straddled the bike, picked up the rifle, and rumbled away. He turned east, followed by a cloud of dust. He wasn't going far, but he pushed the bike, leaning over the tank and pulling hard on the throttle. After less than 10 minutes, he braked, his back tire skidding, and turned into the drive to his friend Brian's farm. He pulled up beside Brian's truck, a massive thing that looked like it was on stilts. It was bright neon green, jacked up with huge tires nearly as tall as Jacob. It made him smile and shake his head. Brian loved it when people knew he was coming. He was a big man with a big personality. Jacob leaned the bike over. He still felt cold from last night, and the troubling dream of the crowd lingered in his mind. He pulled his leathers off, hoping the sun and maybe a little exercise would warm him. A wry grin played on his lips. He would be getting some of that. Anne stepped out of the chicken coop carrying a plastic bucket. She smiled and waved as she walked toward him. Chickens scurried in front of her. Jacob liked Anne. She was a city girl who had made the farm her life, and she fit. Sometimes her clothes were a bit much. Weren't practical, was what his ma would have said. But she looked relaxed and never skipped on work. She always had a smile and seemed to take the strangeness of their lives in stride. She had shrugged when she had heard that Brian and Jacob had made deals with the judge, yet never mentioned it. Jacob walked toward Anne as Brian stepped out of the gloom of the shop, wiping his hands on a rag. It was clear this was a working farm, with machinery parked about. The shop doors were open with a large grain truck half in, hood up. Brian was filthy from head to toe. Jacob lifted his chin in greeting. They had been friends since high school. "Geez, Brian, you're bigger than ever," Jacob said. Brian grunted, looking down. Yep, been working. Been working hard. He tossed the rag behind him and joined Jacob and Anne. Anne smiled and touched Brian's arm. What brings you out our way? Need something heavy moved? Jacob chuckled. No, just want to ask you guys if you've seen anything odd lately.
Just your face!
Brian's massive punch came hard from the right and caught Jacob clean on the chin. With a deep bone-crunching sound, his head snapped backward, pulling his body after it. He flew back to the woodpile several feet away. Yep, Jacob knew it. It happened nearly every time he visited. Brian had a juvenile challenge that persisted since high school, a need to prove himself in Jacob's eyes. They both knew they couldn't hurt each other. Any damage Jacob took would show up on Clyde. It was part of his deal. Brian, on the other hand, had an accident years back and made a deal to be invincible, which meant no matter what harmed him, he got bigger and stronger. The judge always had a twist to his deals, and for Brian that meant he got dumber as well. Each time they fought, it got harder, and so far, Jacob had found ways of not getting the shit beat out of him, or rather out of Clyde. Jacob pushed up from the ground. His broken jaw straightened as he did. Clyde would not like this, but fuck, he needed this. Leaping forward, he slammed his fist into Brian's nose, heard the sickening crunch, and felt it snap. Brian smiled wickedly and punched Jacob back, his nose straightening as he did. Toe to toe, they traded massive blows until Jacob could feel Clyde groan. Jacob stepped back, torqued his long frame, pivoted on his left leg, and caught Brian in the stomach with a powerful back kick. Any other man would have crumpled. Brian grunted and staggered back. Using the momentum of his returning leg, coupled with the power and weight of his 220-pound frame, Jacob connected with a powerful roundhouse kick to the side of Brian's head. His legs went rigid. He dropped to his knees, to all fours, but he didn't go down. After a second, Brian looked at Jacob with murder in his eyes. I fucking hate when you use that karate shit, Brian growled as he pushed himself up. Shit. Jacob had had enough for now. He didn't know what Brian might do if he got really angry. He needed to end this quick. Casting about, he saw the woodpile. He grabbed a 2x4, spun, and smashed Brian on the back of his head. With a loud crack, the wood splintered. Brian sprawled, his face digging into the ground. Jacob stood holding the remainder of the splintered wood, watching his prone friend, willing him not to get up. You boys, always fucking around. Anne stood off to one side, hand on hip, shaking her head. Jacob tossed the leftover scrap of wood. Clyde's not going to be happy. He's going to have quite a few dints. He pushed his hair back and pulled his cap on. Anne, have you seen anything odd around? He asked. Odd? Odd how? Seen any skins about? Skins? No, ain't seen any for maybe 5 years now. Why, have you? Yeah, a couple came by yesterday. One was wearing Billy. Billy? No, not Billy. I just saw him a couple of days ago. Oh, was he delivering? Jacob asked. Behind them, Brian stirred, groaning as he staggered to his feet, cursing Jacob. No, he needed Brian to help him with something. Never really found out what. Hey, Brian, what did Billy need you for? Brian rubbed the back of his head. Needed me to help him move a couple of old cars, is all. Old cars? Where? Up north at a judge's place. Were they some of the judge's old cars? Might be, dunno. Billy just wanted me to lift them up. He said there was something under them he wanted. We left them right where they were. Anne turned to Brian. You are fucking around the judges? Sometimes you're so fucking dumb. What the hell were you thinking? The judge finds out, and it's going to be your fucking ass. Did Billy find what he's looking for? Jacob asked. Nah, they weren't there, so we left, Brian said. Know what he was looking for? Nah, he said that he were looking for something that was going to change everything around here. Said he finally got lucky. Something about his contract being a lie. Don't know. Anne said, a lie? What the hell does that mean? Jacob shrugged. Don't make sense, none of it. A skin was wearing Billy, said my contract was up, and Clyde was for sale. That's not possible, is it? You're not dead. Isn't that the only way Clyde can be sold? Anne asked, confused. No, I don't think it's possible. Clyde's bound to me. When I die, he returns to hell, I guess. Never really thunk about it. So what was Billy going on about? That's what I gotta find out. Stories from a Hard Place is a narrative podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, R.A. Jacobson presents another chapter from Hard Place, read by the author. Opening music by Noah Zachron. Production copyright by R.A. Jacobson, 2022. If you'd like to support Stories from a Hard Place, please go to patreon.com/hardplace. If you would like a book version, either ebook or print, you can find it anywhere books are sold, including your local library. You can find links to all these and much more at Dead Cat Studio. That's deadcatstud.io. Thanks for listening. Keep the shiny side up.